provide you with an update on Platform Holly and Piers 421 decommissioning efforts, along with an update on the Elwood Onshore facility. As many of you know, the State Lands Commission has assumed responsibility for these decommissioning efforts because the facilities were left idle as a result of Venico's bankruptcy in 2017. The State Lands Commission, together with its contractor, staff, and supporting federal and state and local agencies, including the City of Goleta, plugged and abandoned the 421 wells on Haskell's Beach last year. Big job, and it's done. A significant accomplishment for the safety of our community and our ocean environment. The next steps include removal of the 421 facilities, and we will learn more about that this evening. The State Lands Commission is also making progress on plugging and abandoning the wells on Platform Holly. The State Lands Commission and agency partners are making important progress on these decommissioning efforts despite the challenges of the Venico bankruptcy and the coronavirus pandemic. And we will learn about this progress this evening. This town hall is particularly relevant to our community because you will see evidence of the transition away from fossil fuels. Indeed, old oil and gas platforms, piers, and wells are leaving our coastal waters for good. Our coastline along Elwood and Haskell's beaches will ultimately be free of oil infrastructure for the first time in over 100 years. Our community and the environment are safer because of these decommissioning efforts. And for this, we can be proud. This presentation will be hosted by the State Lands Commission staff, Jennifer Lucchesi, Executive Officer, Seth Blackman, Chief Counsel, Jeff Plank, Project Lead for Decommissioning. Supporting agencies in attendance tonight and working together with the state include the U.S. Coast Guard, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, Office of Spill Prevention and Response, and the California Geologic Energy Management Division. Of course, Santa Barbara County and UCSB, and of course, the City of Goleta. So I want to take this opportunity to thank State Lands for hosting this town hall meeting, for everyone that's here this evening. You've always been you've been committed to your promise to keeping us updated, and we appreciate that. And so at this point, I'd like to turn this over to Jennifer.
Good evening, and thank you, Mayor Perotti, for your introduction and kind words. We are so grateful for our partnerships with the City of Goleta, Santa Barbara County, the Santa Barbara County APCD, and our federal and state sister agencies, including OSPR, CalGEM, and the U.S. Coast Guard. I want to take a moment to acknowledge and honor the Chumash people on whose land the facilities we will be talking about this evening sit. We know that repairing our relationship with the land and the Chumash people requires action in addition to acknowledgement, and we intend to do just that. Native people have maintained a constant presence on the landscape for many thousands of years, and they are essential stewardship partners, whether along the coast, along our rivers and valleys, or in our fragile deserts. We thank the Chumash people for participating in our commission's activities and for their essential role in maintaining and adding to our state's rich cultural legacy. I also want to thank everyone, especially our stakeholders and members of the public, for taking the time to join our virtual town hall this evening. We know that the last 12 months have been extremely stressful and overwhelming. In fact, for many of us, that is a significant understatement. And while there is an abundance of hope on the horizon with vaccinations progressing, improved medical treatments, schools reopening, economic recovery assistance on the way, and businesses beginning to open back up, we know that many of you are still experiencing trauma, exhaustion, stress, and worry. Thank you for taking time this evening to hear updates on the Platform Holly Piers 421 decommissioning project. We know your time and energy is valuable, and we appreciate you being here with us tonight. You are currently viewing all of our panelists on what Zoom refers to as their gallery mode, like the game show Hollywood Squares. Using this view, I want to introduce our staff team. As the mayor mentioned, I am joined with our chief counsel, Seth Blackman, and our project executive lead, Jeff Plank. Those should be very familiar faces to many of you. I am also joined by Peter Reagan, our project manager, Jennifer Maddox, our tribal liaison, Eric Gillies, our assistant chief of our Division of Environmental Planning and Management, Sherry Pemberton, chief of our External Affairs Division, Michaela Weimer, senior attorney, Mike Farina, our chief of our Information Services Division, and Katie Robinson Phillip, our environmental scientist in the executive office. For the rest of the evening, we'll be using the speaker view function on Zoom, so you will only be able to see the person speaking as part of the presentation. Our agenda for the evening includes these opening remarks from me. Jeff Plank will then present updates on the Platform Holly plugging and abandonment work, operations and maintenance at the Elwood Onshore Facility, and the proposed project to remove the shore zone piers, commonly referred to as the 421 piers on Haskell's Beach, including the proposed timeframe for the CEQA analysis and anticipated project start date. We will conclude with comments and questions from all of our viewers tonight. I will quickly share some instructions on how best we can participate in this meeting so it runs as smoothly as possible. First, everyone, please make sure you have your microphones or phones muted to avoid background noise. If you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can do so in one of two ways. If you are attending on the Zoom platform, please raise your hand on Zoom. If you're new to Zoom and you joined our meeting using the Zoom app application, the hand icon is at the bottom of your screen. When you click on that hand, it will raise your hand. Second, if you are joining our meeting by phone, you must press *9 on your keypad to raise your hand to make a comment. We will call on individuals who have raised their hands in the order that they are raised, using the name they have registered with or the last three digits of their identifying phone number. After you are called on, you will be unmuted and promoted as a panelist so that we can see you and you can see us as you share your comments. Please also remember to unmute your computer or phone. Please keep your comments respectful and focused. We will mute anyone who fails to follow those guidelines or at worst dismiss them from the meeting. While these virtual meetings are becoming more routine, this is still a relatively new experience for most of us, and we appreciate your support and patience as we work together on this virtual platform. And now, without further ado, I will turn it over to Jeff Plank. Jeff?
Thank you, Jennifer, and good evening to all you folks I can't see. We're going to bring up the presentation. Next slide. The shut-in of Platform Holly and the shutdown of the plugging and abandonment of the wells continues, unfortunately. However, the Commission staff and Exxon are meeting regularly to assess the newest information on the pandemic and the mandates in California. Next slide. A quick recap of the reasons for the shutdown are basically that the small size of the platform and the number of people needed for the operations make physical distancing requirements on the personnel boat and the platform impossible. However, there now appears to be some light at the end of this tunnel with the ongoing distribution of the three vaccines and the two new therapeutics in the pipeline. Once the physical distancing requirements are relaxed or lifted, which the CDC has just announced for some of those who have had the vaccine, we'll be able to resume our work. Next slide. We continue to man the platform and the Elwood Onshore Facility 24/7 with a nominal crew in order to maintain safety, monitor security, monitor the wells, and to maintain the equipment so when allowed, we can begin without the need for extensive repairs. We've temporarily lost the ability to use our Elwood Pier due to the expiration of the agreement with the upland landowner for access. We're continuing discussions to remedy that situation. For the interim, many of you have probably seen the crew boat and our personnel using the Goleta Pier. We hope this situation will resolve quickly. Next slide. Once the plugging and abandonment operations begin, we still estimate that the operations will take 2 years or less to completely seal the 30 wells. As we stated in prior town halls, about half the wells have had their production formation sealed with cement using the coil tubing process. We will be using the drilling rig to complete the abandonment of those wells and the others when we begin again. The CEQA process will start up sometime in the future, possibly after the plugging abandonment, or maybe concurrently as we near the end of those operations to determine the final disposition for the platform. Next slide. The Elwood Onshore facility, not much has changed with the operations there. We're continuing to place unused vessels and equipment out of service to save inspection and regulatory costs. We did drain the tanks of the water and oil that had accumulated over the last 3 years or so from the small continuing flow that comes from the wells on Holly. It took about 12 days and there were no problems encountered. Next slide. Now on to the more current matters and the one I'm sure everyone is interested in, the removal of these old industrial facilities on your beach. Next slide. The two existing PRC 421 piers, that's Pier 421-1 and Pier 421-2, are the last remaining production structures associated with the prolific oil development of the Elwood oil field that occurred along the Elwood coast from the late 1920s to the 1990s. I've circled the approximate location of these two structures in this historic photo from the 30s. As you can see, it was a quite a busy place. During these times, it was normal for the drillers to drill where they saw natural seeps or oil in the water. Not a lot of geologic interpretation to that. Next slide. So just some quick information for those who may be new to our meetings. These wells and structures sit on a state oil and gas lease that originated in 1929 and were among the properties given back to the state in the Venico bankruptcy. Both wells were plugged and abandoned, as the mayor said, to the surface, that is the bedrock underneath the sand, in 2019. Both wells have been shut in for decades. Next slide. So the preliminary engineering and environmental analyses have been done. We are actually having this town hall this evening to announce that the CEQA process for the removal of these structures will begin in the next few weeks with a notice of preparation that begins that process. The commission, along with all interested agencies and comments from the stakeholders, will prepare the required environmental document, which we hope to bring to the commission for approval by year's end. We envision the work to completely remove the structures from the surf zone and the beach to begin next spring or early summer. The work should take about four months. Next slide. The large square structures, the caissons, have deteriorating sheet pile walls seen on the left here, and a reconstructed very thick concrete seawall that's the part that faces the onslaught of the waves. Excuse me. Both caissons are roughly 42 feet wide, 68 feet long, and 20 feet tall. The original walls, composed of sheet pile and grouted with concrete, are approximately 14 inches thick. The sheet pile walls are severely weathered and non-existent in places where the concrete is exposed and in areas that, as shown in the picture on the left. The oceanside caisson seawalls, pictured on the right, were repaired in 2004 and 2011 and have sound structural integrity at both pier locations. These seawall faces are similarly constructed with 12-inch thick precast concrete panels set inside steel H piles. The total thickness of the seawalls, including the panels, is approximately 5 feet thick on the 421 number one caisson and approximately 6 feet thick on the 421 number two. Next slide. The current condition of the 421-1 caisson can be seen on the left. The compacted dirt fill has been removed down approximately 3.5 feet from the top, exposing several concrete walls and several rows of steel piles. The interior is often filled with seawater and high surf. The 421-2 caisson, seen here on the right, is presently filled to a similar level with soil following the removal of approximately 160 cubic yards of soil during the September 2020 soil excavation pilot program we discussed in our last town hall. It's planned to remove the hard-packed soil on the surface with conventional removal equipment and to use a combination of conventional equipment and hydro suction method that we used in the excavation pilot program for the looser, potentially contaminated soils below. Next slide. Both piers were rebuilt, in 2001 in similar fashion. New 12-inch diameter piles were driven on an average 13 feet into the underlying bedrock. The new steel I-beams were placed on top of those. They have timber decking and are a football field apart. Each is approximately 80 feet in length, and 421 is approximately 40 feet in width. 421-2 is approximately 30 feet in width. It's envisioned that the removal of piers will combine work from above with heavy equipment on the pier and the workers below on scaffolding working up from the beach. Next slide. Most decommissioning tasks for operations that will be completed from the pier and the road level should take place between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. However, the work window for the caisson wall removal will be dictated by the low tide events, allowing heavy equipment access to the beach. The average low tide duration for beach access for the heavy equipment is approximately only 4 hours. Therefore, some flexibility will be needed regarding the hours of operation during the caisson removal to allow for nighttime operations due to the progression of tides and possibly other critical factors. All walls, footings, sheet piles, and H piles will be removed at or below bedrock, that is below the sand level. Next slide. For public safety, access to the beach and the areas surrounding the decommissioning activities will be interrupted during pier removal and caisson demolition. We will make every attempt to limit the amount of time of that interruption. However, as I said, we're limited by the tides on the removal of the caissons. We'll have a lot more flexibility on the pier removals. There will be a workforce of about anywhere from 10 to 27 contractors, the highest number being during the caisson wall demolition, which will also require heavy equipment placed on the beach. All equipment will be moved from the beach to a staging area to be determined at the end of each day's work. Next slide. There's no risk of an oil spill from the plugged and abandoned wells, and although there is virtually no risk of a spill from the planned work, containment equipment and personnel will be on hand to respond to any oily soil from inside the caissons or other fluids from the equipment that may impact the beach during the work. Further, if for some reason natural seeps located in and around the 421-2 pier become active during the removal process, those same responders will mitigate any natural releases that occur during the work to reduce the overall risk to the environment. Next slide. I hope this presentation has helped you understand some of the complexity of the work to be done and has informed you of the process, at least a good overview, that we'll be going through to remove these structures from your beach. With that, I'll turn the program back over to the panel for any questions or comments.
Thank you, Jeff. So that concludes our presentation, and we are happy to take comments and questions at this time. So just to remind everyone on how to participate, please raise your hand in Zoom. If you are joining through the Zoom platform, or if you're calling in, please press *9. And Katie will be identifying you in the order that you raised your hand. We will promote you to a panelist so we can see you and you can see us. We just ask that you unmute yourself, and we will unmute you on our end. If you prefer not to have your video on, that's fine too. Just make sure you turn your video feed off on your end. I also want to just emphasize that the subjects tonight for those who have questions or comments are the Platform Holly plug-in and abandonment effort, the Piers 421 removal project, and the status of the EOF. I know the ultimate disposition, including concepts for reuse of the platform, is an important subject to all of you. However, I just want to remind you that we are at least a year, if not longer, from even beginning to start the public outreach and engagement on the final disposition of the platform. So I really encourage those who have comments and ideas to share on the ultimate disposition of the platform to submit those in writing by email or US Postal Service to us, as opposed to commenting verbally this evening. This way we can ensure your comments are part of our files and we can incorporate and reference that input at the appropriate time when we start that engagement and outreach. As a reminder, after we promote you to make a comment, we will then demote you back to being an attendee afterwards so we can promote the next public commenter. So with that, Katie, will you call the first person who would like to make a comment or ask a question?
Yes, thank you. So for the first speaker, we have Allison M, and I am promoting now.
Hi, Allison. So we can see that you've joined us. You just need to, I think, unmute on your side.
Hi, I unmuted. And yes. Ms. Lucchesi, hello. Thank you, much respect. I raised my hand when I wanted to speak about the repurposing of the platform, and then I heard your statement. I think it's very important, and I'll try to keep it short. I think it's very important to mention that the repurposing of the platform could be a part and parcel of the Green New Deal. There is the concept, of course, of carbon and methane sequestration, which contemplates potentially the usage of the existing oil infrastructure in reverse, meaning pumping methane and carbon, GHG, carbon, methane, whatever it is, pumping it down. So it actually could be a green reuse of the existing oil pipelines and platforms. And so I wanted to say that. I think it's important to make it part of the public record. I'm sure that whatever is going on has had much critical analysis, and I'm coming into this at the very last minute. I'm actually here to speak in public comments at the end on another matter of public interest, if that is available. But I wanted to raise the potentiality. I just want people to think about the fact that the existing oil infrastructure could be used in remediation of climate impact. So that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Allison. And just to be clear, this is our public comment period time. So this isn't a formal State Lands Commission meeting. This is a staff hosted town hall event. And so we are in our public comment period now. I'm inferring from what you said that you might have comments based on something totally separate from the decommissioning project. We're happy to take those comments offline by phone or by email, but we would prefer to keep the comments focused on the overall Platform Holly and Piers 421 decommissioning project, because that's the purpose we're here for.
Great. Am I still on audio?
You are, yes.
Okay. So first of all, thank you. Thank you very much, as always, for your incredibly professional work, which I'm sure has been in the analysis of this issue. I would like to say that probably myself and a couple other people did dial in expecting that the town hall was a typical public meeting that did have a general public comment item. Quite often that's at the beginning. I know the State Lands Commission does it at the end. I did want to speak on the issues at Docktown because they're so pressing. And we didn't want to let any meeting of the State Lands Commission, even a special meeting focused on a specific item, to go without the opportunity to put comments on the public record. So is that best done at the end? Is that, I'd rather not just email it, to be honest.
No, I understand that, Allison, and I thought I recognized your voice. It's nice to hear you. But this is not a formal State Lands Commission public meeting that you're used to participating in and making public comment on. There are no State Lands Commissioners at this town hall, and it is a very focused project specific town hall event. So I would request that we take this offline and have a conversation, and I'm happy to give you a call tomorrow.
I'm happy to do that. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you, Allison.
I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Katie, can you call the next person who would like to ask a question or make a comment?
Yes, thank you. The next speaker is Kyle Richards.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Hi, it's nice to see you.
Hi there. Yeah, I just wanted to say hello, Councilmember Kyle Richards. And I just want to say first that I'm very grateful that you're here with us. You know, I've been very impressed with the State Lands Commission handling of this decommissioning process. I'm very grateful that you have hosted a series of these town hall events. I was trying to count. I know that this is at least my fourth or possibly more. So thank you very much. And I just appreciate the transparency with which you operate and sharing this information and giving the community an opportunity to learn more, you know, along the way. So thank you very much. Really, the only question I had, and I think you kind of shot it down already, is with regard to the ownership status of the EOF. And I don't know if there's anything brief that you can share about that, but that was really what was top of my mind. So if you have anything, I would appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Of course. Thank you, Councilmember Richards. It's great to see you, and thank you for your kind words. I'd love to turn that question over to our chief counsel, Seth Blackman, who can provide some updates on the litigation involving the EOF, which will help answer your question.
Thanks, Jennifer. And Councilmember Richards, to your point, we are still waiting on the resolution of the continuing litigation. So in September 2020, we had a hearing back east in front of the Third Circuit Court of Appeal. We actually anticipated a judgment on that in mid-December, and we have not actually received a judgment yet. So we are still waiting on a final dispensation from that court. And really, I think as soon as we know what happens, that'll probably be part and parcel for other town hall meetings, but also it'll be up on our website very quickly. And I think other types of press releases, because it'll really dictate kind of next steps. For right now, it's a very open question. If we are successful and we win, then this particular battle and having to defend the state of California back in Delaware, it will be over, but the litigation would likely take place here in California, which we think is an appropriate forum. But it's, I think the resolution of the final ownership and control over the Elwood Onshore facility is gonna still be a standing question. But we continue to look for other ways to continue the operations and to enhance the efficacy of the work we're doing at Hawley, and to try and have to reduce the overall impact associated with the Elwood Onshore facility. I think that's a benefit too. So hopefully there will be more news, but we are waiting with bated breath, much as you are.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the update. Good to see
Absolutely.
You.
Thank you. Katie, can you please call the next speaker?
Yes, our next speaker is Kristen Hislop.
Hi, Kristen.
Hi, thank you so much.
Yes.
Kristen Hislop, I'm with the Environmental Defense Center. And I just want to first start off by thanking all of you at the State Lands Commission. These town halls have been super informative, and just we really appreciate the outreach and transparency. So thank you so much. My question was just to clarify the dates in terms of when you'll be starting the work for the piers and wells. I think you said spring to summer, next spring or summer. Is that this year or 2022? And then the CEQA process likely being after the plugging and abandonment platform Hawley, or maybe concurrently, just if we could get a little more details on when that might be, that would be great.
Of course. So for the Piers 421 removal project, We hope and anticipate to start that physical removal project in the spring or summer of 2022. Before we start the physical removal, we obviously have to go through the CEQA process. We hope to release the notice of preparation within the next couple of weeks, which will kick off the CEQA process. And we hope to conclude that by the end of the year and bring that CEQA document to our commission for their approval at our December meeting at the latest, hopefully earlier than that. And then for the Platform Holly decommissioning project, you know, ideally it would be great if we could start the feasibility and CEQA process concurrently or towards the latter half of completing the plugging and abandonment work. And we will try to shoot for that goal, but it will really depend on how much progress we're making on plugging and abandonment and the complexities involved and our staff and resource capacity levels.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you. Katie, can you call the next person who would like to ask a question or make a comment?
Yes, our next speaker is Carla Frisk.
Hi, Carla. You might need to unmute yourself, Carla. There you go.
There we go. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Well, thank you for doing this. Reiterate which Kristen said about all the, how helpful the town halls have been and everything. So I won't re-say all those words. But anyway, my question is maybe for Jeff, and you answered a little bit of it in terms of the lease 421. That's obviously what's the most pressing right now in terms of getting started on that.
Yes. That is our priority for this year.
I'm sorry, Carla,
you might have broken up a little bit, so we might not have heard your question.
Okay, so I just said that the NOP is going to come out this year. You may or may not at this point know if that's going to be an environmental impact report or if it's going to be a mitigated negative declaration. And I just, you know, I'm representing Get Oil Out tonight, and I just wanted to reiterate GOO's support for this project. It's been a long time coming. Obviously, we really want to see all that infrastructure gone sooner, as soon as possible. And I know you guys are moving as fast as you can. So we would encourage you to seriously consider a mitigated negative declaration, if at all possible, so that, you know, we don't have to get into a much more protracted process. And considering that the project itself is beneficial to the environment and to the community, it seems like that might not be an impossible thing. So, but it sounds like you're still shooting for December no matter what. So we're all about that, and I hope to be able to participate in person.
Yeah, we agree. We would love even our next town hall event that we host to be have the option of doing that in person. Yes, I think that, you know, we have set the outside goal of a December approval date for the CEQA document. And that is based on a document like an EIR that takes the longest. We are still in the process of assessing what the most appropriate environmental document is. And obviously, if we determine that a mitigated neg deck is the right way to go, that will hopefully be completed earlier than December. But we will definitely keep everyone posted as we advance on our analysis and determination on that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carla. Katie, can you call the next person who would like to make a comment or ask a question?
Yes, our next speaker is Harry Rabin.
Hello, Harry.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Let me get my video here. I just wanted to thank you all for the incredible work you've been doing over the last 2-3 years. And I'm with Heal the Ocean, so we've been working with State Lands for a while. And our concerns and questions right now are in the planning for decommissioning the platform as well as the piers. What measures are going to be put in place for monitoring these abandoned wellheads? And what is the access going to be in the event that these seals may fail? Like we're seeing wellheads that are old in Summerlin and failing. So will we be able to have access, you know, to these sealed wellheads? And I guess that would be a question for Jeff.
Yeah, so I'll just start and turn it over to Jeff to probably correct me. But there are some key differences between the wells at Summerlin and the 421 wells in the sense that the Summerlin wells were never plugged and abandoned properly to the required specifications and regulations that we and CalGEM have. The 421 wells have been plugged and abandoned to the right, consistent with all current regulations and to the appropriate level for what we believe is permanent protection from an oil spill. We don't believe there is any possibility of a spill coming or a leak from those wells at this point. But I will turn it over to Jeff to add any additional context information, especially about monitoring those wells. Jeff?
Thank you, Jennifer. You're quite correct. The wells in Summerlin are completely different than what we're talking about today. Some of them weren't even, they were just left open. Others probably had like telephone poles stuffed in them. Anyway, the programs that we have produced with Exxon and have been more or less, almost all of them have been approved by the with the CalGEM now, are quite specific as far as how many, how much cement and where it's placed, and the cement plugs will be all the way to the surface. Your question about monitoring them is a little more difficult. There's really nothing left on the well to monitor, but they're all cut off between 5 and 50 feet below the surface. If there's some potential for future oil coming from those, we would have to have it investigated, and we will know where each one of those wells are. We'll take a look at it, and we know how to get back into them if we have to do some remedial work on those. There's nothing left on the wellhead, if that's what your question was, to indicate that there's any oil or pressure building within that, within the old hole.
Yeah. And to continue that too, in the process of dismantling these piers, like you mentioned, natural seeps could go off and that leaking will be contained. I'm curious because I was asked to investigate is in regards to putting a temporary seawall in front of that whole area to protect the environment in case that does happen as you are removing piers 421 1 and 2. Is that going to be a methodology that's going to be, you know, with a little foresight just in case we do have some kind of leak versus boom that's going to be used?
I'm curious. When you talked about put a seawall in there, are you talking like a cofferdam?
Yeah, well, like, there's these rubber, you know, giant inflatable seawall that they've engineered and they use in some of these operations. So I'm just wondering, it's like putting a curtain around the front of it.
Yeah, so I'm familiar with what you're talking about. No, we haven't envisioned doing that. First of all, the wells are plugged and abandoned, both of those two in the surf zone. And there's no pressure and there's they are pretty much cemented up to the surface. The only potential, I hate to call it a spill, but for lack of a better term, would come if some of that contaminated soil that's within the caissons, if that was to escape or fall, you know, over onto the beach and stuff, we'll have to clean that up. We're not anticipating well, we're not anticipating anything else. Of course, there's always hydraulic fluid and stuff in the heavy equipment that could possibly rupture. But we cannot contain, well, we cannot contain or remediate a natural seep. I mean, the seep, we've seen the seep activity in that area now for well over a year. It's not much, but there's like little bits of oil, mostly globs, coming up. It was just recently about a week's worth of that. We're not, we can't stop a natural seep. Well, there's been no remedial action that we're going to be doing for those, but we will take care of anything that does come out of or occurs during the abandonment of the caissons. That caisson seawall itself is well, very thick. But no, we haven't talked about putting anything out in front of the caissons to capture anything, because realistically, there's virtually little, I'm going to say it, there's very little chance of anything like a spill or anything getting away from us. So.
And Jeff, if I could add too, and I'll turn it over to Seth to provide additional context. The risk of a spill is something that we are looking at, even though, you know, in addition to our belief that the risk is super low right now, but it is a thoughtful process that we go through when we're determining how to approach the CEQA analysis, and particularly whether we pursue a mitigated neg deck or an environmental impact report. So the questions that you're raising and the ideas that you are bringing up is something that we will systematically go through as we pursue an MND or an EIR as well.
Yeah. And I would just add to what Jennifer said, which is, in either the mitigated negative declaration or an EIR, we're going to have a mitigation monitoring program in both instances for the potential impacts that the project has on the environment. To the extent that we have a release as a result of a seep, and I think that's the word I would use as opposed to a spill, because there's not going to be any oil coming from a reservoir that's tapped by an oil well. We do know that under PRC 421-2, the pier out there, there is an outcrop that comes up within about 3 to 6 feet of the bottom of the caisson. It's the bedrock comes very high up on the beach profile. And we know that there is a seep that runs sort of perpendicular across 421 under kind of the main caisson portion. And there was a release a year or two ago now. And, you know, we actually did do some mediation while we were doing some root cause analyses and trying to really figure out what all was happening. And then, you know, through the year, the subsequent year and some change, we've seen that seep, like Jeff said, kind of pop up. Our idea here, twofold, is, as Jeff said, for all of the work that's going to be done on the caissons that are kind of the waterward side of this, we're going to be working at low tide. And what we did in the past was we did just simple sand berms. And the sand berms worked effectively for just sort of housing where any kind of water came up, wash up, or any kind of oil presented. And then booms and absorbent pads were more than effective. We worked with Patriot Environmental last time, and we'll be doing the same kind of thing to have the team on board. Our primary goal there is just not to exacerbate the natural seep kind of getting out into the environment. We'll just sort of be there cleaning up if it does occur. But because of the way that the program is theoretically structured right now, that's going to be a pretty small overall risk just by way of how we're going to be working. I'd also note that, you know, the context for a release of any kind of fluids or suspension in the existing soil inside the caissons is likely going to get addressed. That's part of the plan we're working on right now. That'll be part of the EIR that everyone can comment on, is a lot of that soil is going to be removed prior to. We don't want any contaminated soil there when we're ready to start knocking down those waterward site seawalls, right? So everything else should be out and clean. And then the infrastructure, the major infrastructure, will start coming down around that. So I think for right now, you know, we're very cognizant of the coastal concerns for oil in the area. And, you know, like I said, we went through this process some time ago on 421. So I think that we have an idea where to start with it. I don't think we have to go because of what we're doing and the quantities of oil we're talking about, which, you know, the amount that the that are expressed under the seats are very small, you know. But because of that, because it's these small amounts that come up very sporadically, I don't think we need to have larger, more exclusive infrastructure like you were asking about, like a cofferdam or a seawall, even a transient one. I think that based on just some of the mechanical features that we have, that we'll have out there and what we've done in the past, that we've got a program that works that allows for containment, and then we have our cleanup crews that are there as well.
Okay. And just similar, like with Platform Holly, the big question there is, as you plug all those wellheads, 30 of them, 15 to go, is it being taken into consideration if this gets a reef to rigs conversion and it has to be cut off at 50 or 60 feet down? Is that all going to be solidly plugged in that event? Or is that something you're looking ahead at? Or are you just basically plugging everything up from the top and not thinking about a rigs to reef solution to maintain the reef that has been there for over 60 years?
Well, as you know, the platform itself sits on top of a rather large seep itself. That not much we can do about that. We put a couple of tents out there back in the late 70s. So the wells will be completely sealed up to the surface. We will know where they are. We have not gotten far enough to decide whether we were going to be taking the conductors out, which are the outer casings that you see when you look through the platform right here behind me. If we leave those in, naturally they would be a source for observing wells after they're plugged for some time until the platform's taken out. The other alternative is we may take them out as soon as we've cemented everything off, but that's still the engineering hasn't been done on that yet.
And I'll also just add really quickly that for the for CalGEM, previously Dogger, the Geologic Energy Management Division, their regulatory requirements for a complete abandonment requires the removal of all casing and conductors. So there's a possibility, as Jeff said, that we'll be sort of in an interim position here, and I think that's appropriate, where we will finish all of the plug and abandonment of the well so that there is no flow of oil or gas to the surface. And as Jeff mentioned, for cementing jobs, the cement will be down at the surface of the ocean. So obviously we wouldn't take it up into the platform, but the concrete would be to the surface of the ocean floor. So those would be inert. What's going to happen with the platform is really going to be informed significantly by public discourse and the needs of the state and the commission's evaluation of all of the needs that we'll go through in the EIR for Platform Holly. Again, we don't really have a date on that. I think, you know, If we're lucky, and I mean that, if we're really lucky and everything starts moving forward again because the pandemic, we start to see some strides and some kind of light at the end of the tunnel, we might actually be able to get back to plug and abandonment towards the end of summer, beginning of fall this year. And if we get there and we start making some real headway through the end of the fourth quarter of this year, then I think we can start to talk at the end of this year really seriously about when EIR would be coming out, what our NOP would look like, and then also sort of what the plan and the program would be. But until then, it's sort of an open question. And I will leave that the, and I think there's a lot of people on this call today who know this too. The question about rigs to reefs is a really difficult one to even kind of tackle at this point, because the law itself is very unsettled. And it hasn't been addressed at a legislative level for it to be functional for certain parties. The commission, I think, can look at a variety of different options in terms of the potential reuse. But again, it all has to pencil out and it has to make sense. So I think a lot of that's going to be happening in the context of the Holly EIR. And what we anticipate with the Holly EIR is something a little bit more, well, not a little bit. We anticipate a much more robust public comment period on that than we would have for maybe a standard EIR. And so I think there will be a lot of input, and quite frankly, obviously, there's a lot of interest as identified by the number of attendees at today's meeting.
Okay, well, that's great information. The last thing was, is SB 44 paying for what? Is it involved with Pier 421 for funding, Jennifer?
No, it's not. Okay. SB 44 is purely for the plugging and abandonment of legacy wells, and we are focused at Summerland right now.
Okay, no, that's great. We really appreciate everything you guys are doing, and Yuli Ocean is here for you if we can help in any way, as I think we've done over the last 3-4 years.
You have, Heal the Ocean has been an incredible partner for us and a great advocate for making sure that these wells are plugged and abandoned properly and the public can use their beach resources and swim in the ocean safely. So we really appreciate the partnership and the advocacy, and thank you for the really great questions.
Oh, sure. Thank you. And you too, Sherry. Thank you.
And Jennifer, can we add one thing to this? Because I think it's important, and I know it's probably a lingering question for everybody else, and it's one that we get asked a lot, which is a lot of folks have asked, you know, on the timing for the CEQA analysis, what that's going to look like on Holly, and then how long before we're done with the plug and abandonment. And as I was mentioning to Harry a minute ago, you know, if we're really lucky, we can actually start plug and abandonment again by late summer, early fall this year. From the point that we actually get that started again, if everything rolls through and we're lucky enough to kind of start again, it's going to be at least a 2-year process for plug and abandonment. So our ability to sort of start the CEQA process in the midst of the plug and abandonment, I think, is very good. We'll have a window. And as we continue to make headway and bring the kind of the progress that we're making back to the people in the area, we'll be able to sort of start modifying those timelines as we get more data and more clarity on our expectations for the completion of plug and abandonment. The next question that a lot of people ask us is, when do we start decommissioning? And that's obviously going to be at some point after the CEQA document is done. And then there's a whole permitting scheme that gets much broader than that. So.
That's great, Seth.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thank you, Harry.
Thank you.
All right. Katie, can you identify the next speaker?
Yes, thank you. The next speaker is calling in from a number ending in the last 3 digits, 084.
Hi, good evening, everyone. Thanks for putting this event on for us all. Also, congratulations to the State Lands Commission on your recent success at Rincon. My name is Ryan, and I'm the creative director of America's Green Corps. We're a newly formed California-rooted not-for-profit. Our lab branch has been working on a key art and science strategy to transition aging oil infrastructure and improve coastal water quality for the benefit of future generations. We were wondering if someone could expound on the coil tubing process, as well as the expectations for the seep post-plugging at Platform Holly. It was made public at another event that we attended that the seafloor below Holly was and has been bubbling and seeping for quite some time. And I guess we're curious, do we think that the plugging of the lines will stop the seeping that's going to go on there?
Jeff, do you want to take a stab at those questions? And then we can turn it over to Seth to add additional context.
Sure. The bubbling and sometimes it's pretty expressive out there, and it has been going on ever since the platform was put in, even before they were drilling the wells. You can't just assume that the bubbling is coming from the wells themselves. Matter of fact, the most robust bubbling and gas that we see is off the, let me get this right, the northwest corner of the platform. Almost on a daily basis, you can see quite, and it's always bubbling. As I said in the presentation, a lot of times the companies put these wells, they drill the wells where they see the oil. Natural seeps are a good indication that there's oil below them. It's been going on for quite a while. I imagine it'll be going on forever. We can't really stop the geologic processes that have been there, you know, for eons. I'm not sure if there was a question there about, you know, the cementing of the wells, but we always make sure there's, I believe under Exxon's property, there has to be 3 cement plugs that go, you know, formation to formation, so that basically what we're doing is replacing the natural formations that were there that kept the oil in place. The natural seeps, the cracks in the earth, and the oil and gas that, and even the formation water that come up through them, have been there forever. There's not much we can do about that.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask one more question?
Of course.
Sure. What is the long-term plan for the sea to shore cable or infrastructure with relation to, you know, the plugging and all that?
That's a good question. That'll be dealt with in the environmental, during the environmental process. Sometimes they're just grouted with cement or a grout, and other times they're completely taken out. But that's an environmental question for the future as to what the best result is for the environment.
So,
okay,
yeah, just to confirm on that, and I'm looking at Seth to help me out. That will be assessed and analyzed as we approach the ideas and the proposed project for the ultimate disposition of the platform and related infrastructure. So that's where we will assess the future of that cable and all the other related infrastructure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would also add, just going back to the seeps, it's a really interesting question. There definitely seems to be some research indicating some communication between the original reservoir and the seep surface, or the seeps outcrop at the surface. But the ultimate impact of the final plug and abandonment of the wells will be very interesting to sort of see what happens. We're actually working right now with a team from UC Santa Barbara. Dr. David Valentine's lab has been working on assessing the level of seep activity that goes on, and trying to measure the volume of seep gas and everything else that's happening from the coal oil point seep underlying Holly. So one of the things that we actually anticipate including in the EIR and as a kind of an ongoing educational component to this is the data that we're kind of receiving and what it all means, and really whether or not, pardon me, really whether or not the seeps are going to see any major changes. It's entirely possible that they could be kind of at hydrostatic pressure now and just producing kind of where they're at, because there hasn't been anything produced offshore Santa Barbara in the last almost 6 years now, since May 19th, 2015. So yeah, I think it's a really interesting question that we don't have a simple answer to, because the geology out in that particular area is incredibly complex. But we're hoping that the more data we collect and the more information we have to share as part of both our EIR and our general kind of due diligence on all this work will help address some of those questions for the long term. But I think that's a nice way of saying we don't know, but we're going to try and get you more information.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your questions. Katie, can you please identify the next speaker?
Yes, thank you. The next speaker is Amber Sparks.
Hi, Amber.
Hello. Thank you, everyone, for hosting this incredibly informative meeting. I've really enjoyed it and enjoyed hearing everybody's comments. I am co-founder of the Blue Latitudes Foundation, and I have a question. How are you guys planning on educating and connecting with the stakeholders during this process, including the tribal and fisheries concerns? Despite these open forum and public meetings, are there any other efforts that the State Lands Commission will be making?
That's a great question. And I would love to turn it over to our tribal liaison, Jennifer Maddox, to highlight the work that she's doing to keep our tribal partners informed and engaged in the process. Jennifer.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thanks for that great question. We have formed what we're loosely calling our tribal working group about a couple of years ago. And we are working together in that informal capacity to ensure that we are amplifying and uplifting the voices of all of our Chumash tribal partners in this process, both through formal government-to-government consultation and through informal roundtables, listening sessions, venues like this, and tribal caucus-type discussions. the pandemic has certainly created some challenges for us with in that regard, but we are working through those. And I think it's been said many times, we're really keeping our fingers crossed that we're getting back to in-person fairly soon. And my shop coordinates very closely, you know, here in the executive office, also with our environmental division, with the legal division, and with Jeff and his team, to understand where we are in the process. And then I serve as the conduit of information and ensure the availability for any questions at any time. And we're also working towards opportunities to put a process and documentation together for the tribal working group partners and the Indigenous communities in the area to make sure that they have opportunities to participate physically participate, including working on getting trainings and things like that going. So I hope that answers your question. I didn't answer the fisherman question. I'm happy to do that as well, but I think probably that's you, Jennifer, or Eric.
Yeah. Yeah. So just in terms of other stakeholders, industry groups, commercial groups, there's a number of different ways that we are outreaching and providing information. One is through our website, which is pretty standard across all state agencies, but our website, our webpage dedicated to Platform Holly is continuously updated and has a wealth of historic documentation to help provide context and information. We provide regular updates to our commission at our public meetings, and those updates are also in written form as part of my executive officer's report. We will continue to have these town halls, and then importantly, especially for the Piers 421 environmental document, and then as we move forward for the Platform Holly environmental document, we will be conducting really robust and comprehensive outreach under the CEQA umbrella. We are also work closely with the city of Goleta and with fishing groups when we are doing major work out at the platform so that we give everybody enough notice ahead of time. So days and going out on vessels can be planned around those activities around the platform. Does that answer your questions?
It does. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Katie, do we have any additional public speakers or folks that want to ask questions?
Thank you, Jennifer. At this time, we don't have any other hands raised.
Okay, great. Well, I'm just pulling up my notes real quick. So in conclusion, we want you all just to be on the lookout for the notice of preparation for the Piers 421 removal project. It will provide critical information on how you can provide comments and input on that proposed project. We anticipate lots of progress on this project this year, especially when we compare it to last year. So please stay engaged with the commission and our team. We are always available to answer questions, respond to emails, that sort of thing. And we will continue to work closely with the city and the entire community as things progress. And then the last thing I just want to note, it's separate from Platform Holly, but I know it's near to you all, is that we do have a second decommissioning project underway just south of you all, offshore Ventura County, Rincon Island, and the onshore portion of the Rincon leases. We have completed all the plugging and abandonment of the 74 wells associated with those lease operations. We have one well that's left to be plugged, that's the injector well, but we are moving on to the feasibility and environmental assessment for the ultimate disposition of the island and the onshore land. And so towards that end, we are hosting a town hall event very similar to this, but focused on the Rincon Island and onshore facilities and the next steps associated with that overall decommissioning. And that's scheduled for April 7th, starting at 5:30. So if you want to learn more about that, please visit our website, and we hope to see you at that event as well. So with that, seeing no other comments or questions, hands raised, we will conclude this evening's town hall. Again, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. Oh, one moment. I do see one hand still raised. Katie, do you want to call that person?
Yes, thank you. So we have one more speaker. Hillary has her hand raised.
Hi, Hillary. It looks like you might have your microphone on mute. Hillary, we are having trouble hearing you. Maybe you need to unmute yourself. There you go.
Okay, here I am.
Yes.
Thank you so much, you guys. Thank you for taking me at the last minute. And I'm only here to say, thank you for what you're doing, and that I have missed this whole session. And I want to know, is there a transcript? I see subtitles going across. How can I get this conversation after this?
That is a great question. Thank you for raising that. So many thanks to the City of Goleta under the mayor's leadership. They are recording this, and they will be providing us with a link to the recording that we'll post on our website, and I'm sure they will be posting it on their website as well. So there's two different ways you can view the entirety of this meeting.
I thank you so much for that, because everything you're doing is really important. It's important to heal the ocean, and I appreciate the work you're doing.
Thank you, Hillary. We appreciate your partnership and leadership at Heal the Ocean as well.
Thank you.
All right. Well, with that, and I'm really grateful that for that question. So if you do want to rewatch this this town hall event, you can access the link at the City of Goleta's website or through our website over the next couple of days. With that said, I think we're ready to conclude. Mayor Perotti, do you have anything you would like to say in conclusion?
I just want to thank you all so much. This was so informative, and we all so appreciate your time coming and letting us know exactly what's going on and answering questions. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. All right. Good night, everyone. Please stay safe and healthy.
You too.
Really want to please me, be sugar and spice, everything nice.